Good evening. I avoided this seat for quite a few years, and here I am back again after 2 weeks. So it's not going to be a habit, though, trust me. And Kokio, I think you gave this to me a few years ago. Thought I would never have a need for this either, but maybe you knew something I didn't know, huh? So, yeah, they're all familiar faces from a few weeks ago. Thanks for coming back. The topic that I'd like to discuss tonight is on trust. And, you know, Kokio had said the theme or a focus for this year would be on devotion. And so on, Sunday nights before the class, there is a discussion group that the Shuso leads. And so we spent the first 2 weeks discussing about what aspects of devotion, what does devotion mean to those who attended. And being a former teacher, I took notes on what the different individuals had said about what is devotion. I'm sure some of you can't see these all the way back, but I will read them to you. Devotion means intimacy with all beings, trust, sincerity, open-heartedness, offering, faith, without condition, timeless suspension of time, loving commitment, vowing, physical expression, generosity, gratitude. Nevermore. Wholehearted practice. Appreciate deeply. Devotion does work. No gap. Full-hearted, open-hearted, and action. Give freely. Mindful. Not a fixed devotion. Kindful. Being present. Radical acceptance. Sustain. Quite a few different takes on devotion. My take, or my word in this, was trust. And I want to read something first on trust from some of you probably remember Daijaku Kunst. She had practiced here for a few years, and she published her dissertation called Trust, Realization, and the Self in Soto Zen Practice. And trust can be seen as the thread that runs through the practice life of the Soto Zen student. The presence of basic trust allows for the formation of a self that is capable of full engagement in the practice. For me, it seems like trust begins as soon as we're out of the womb. We're trusting the first person who gives us something, substance, our mother. We're trusting in having food and warmth and clothing. And then as it goes on, we start to find bonds and trust other people. And trust is really pretty much sort of a two-way street. We give trust, and I think we also look for or accept trust. So I truly believe that myself, and I think it begins as our small self, where we exchange trust. When I first came here, I certainly didn't really trust the practice. I was testing it out. And now I do trust the practice very, very much. But and Daijaku Kun says something more about that, and I want to read another segment from her. It says, with basic trust, this self can enter into experience fully and cultivate a stable awareness, grounded in the body and inclusive of the entire range of human experience. A little more. Buddhist perspective, we can say that with a foundation of basic trust, a system where the self is not metaphysically privileged can be explored. This exploration will continue as long as there is a continued belief, trust, faith, or lived experience that this system is one that is hospitable to human life. It seems that once we have trust in oneself, once I can trust my small self, I can look and take a chance at looking at the bigger self, questioning the self that is outside of me. As Jaku says, this trust can be likened to a shift in focus from the trust that the self, as discrete entity, can be relied upon to reappear following experiences of transitional space, to a trust in relationality and in the state of being between. It is based in experience in which the line between subject and object is not clearly drawn. Times when what me and what is not me are not easily distinguished. I really didn't realize how important trust was to me until a few years ago. An event happened. As I was saying just a moment ago, trust is a two-way street. I trust individuals, and in exchange, I feel there's a trust in return. And a couple years ago, something happened. I had made a mistake doing something, and this person that I really trusted a lot and respected came back to me and said, I don't trust you. I just don't trust you anymore. And to this day, there's still that event, that happening that happened. But it taught me just how much I really value trust and faith. And this individual who I had placed a lot of faith in and a lot of trust, that was reciprocal. And then when that happened, it was like, wow. So being the person I am, I thought, okay, I'll get over this, that this happened, we resolved it. And but I never really have yet. It has just taught me that trust is a very deep, a deep seed in me, I should say, I think. So, I guess what it really did was it rattled the faith in myself, too. So, and I believe Daijaku says something about that also. Yeah, it rattled my trust, but it also rattled my faith. And what Daijaku talks about here is she goes back and she looks at the original meaning of shin, you know, like shoshin, and I always thought it meant mind, body, but she says that it goes back to belief or trust or faith. And somehow over the years it got translated into more of a body or mind, and
Two different characters,
yeah. That there's a couple of pages on it here, but that really surprised me, because to me, Shosha means beginner's mind, right? That's what, you know, that's Suzuki Roshi's Zen mind, beginner's mind. And I guess the beginner's mind requires faith and trust and belief, to always keep that open mind. That really surprised me when I read that, how that the faith and belief and trust turned into beginner's mind. So, and when I was talking with Patrick about what I was going to talk about tonight, and you know, it's just, I got the impression that it's always good to throw a little Dogen in to a talk. So, you can't go wrong with Dogen, right? You know? And of course, it's here too. It's here in the book, and it's also in the book here. So, Dogen wrote in the fascicle. I'm going to probably mess this up a little bit. Gakudo Yojinsha, Yojinshu. They're getting close. Okay. Those who practice the Buddha way should first of all trust in the Buddha way, should trust that they are in essence within the Buddha way. He is referring here to two elements of trust that together allow for the emergence of absolute trust. The second element is intimately bound to a sense of self that has developed from experiences of affirmation and support. Trusting the Buddha way and trusting that one is within and of the Buddha way, regardless of circumstances, sets up the conditions for the transformation of self-experience. As the self allows itself to be transformed, ideas of what is to be gained by doing the practice begin to fade, and self-centered agendas become less relevant. Through this, wholehearted engagement comes to be experienced, not as a means for the attainment or accrual of certain experiences, but as an expression of the Buddha way. One of the responses here I mentioned a minute ago was wholehearted practice or wholehearted engagement. And this person said, devotion as the word doesn't work for this person. It just didn't work for her. It was the wholehearted practice. So I see very clearly that trust and the self are very much interrelated, and I really didn't notice that until, you know, this event happened in my life that seemed like a crisis. It was like, oh, this person no longer trusts me, has no faith in me. But the good news is it taught me how much I really do value faith and trust and giving it and receiving it. And like I said, when I first came here, I didn't trust in the practice completely. I think maybe when I spoke the first time, it was hard for me to bow full prostrations. And that was probably part of not wanting to surrender and trust and give up part of myself, the smaller self. So I guess I'd like to ask a few questions of the audience, you know. Like I said, being a teacher, you're full of questions. So, and you don't have to answer these, but let me go through them first, and then I'll back up. And there's only four, but I think we all can benefit from asking, you know, what do we trust, or who do we trust? People, objects, things. What or who do we really, really trust? Can you trust your intentions? What do you trust about your practice? When you go to your practice, you're probably going to that part of your practice that you trust the most. What's the role of vows in our practice, or your practice, the vows? Jan Chosen Bay just published a book on vows, and it's captured me. Different kind of vows there are, but anyone care to share either what or who do you trust, or can you trust your intentions? What do you trust about your practice? Yes, Ken.
I feel like I can trust my fully meeting experience without any kind of expectation. And when I can fully accept the experience fully, you know, for the pros and cons, the impermanence, the change of the situation, mm-hmm. When I can fully accept that, fully engage in that, I feel like I can trust that. So it's sort of like on the line of intimacy.
Pardon?
It's on the line of intimacy.
Right, okay, yeah.
Yeah. So if I have the intimacy of the moment, I can meet that, I can engage with that without these preconceptions and fully meet it, you know, in the gray area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you said something about expectations. I've always thought, don't let expectations get in the way of seeing.
Right.
You know, because we always have these expectations of what's going to happen and what we're going to do. But if you can just, you know, beginner's mind again, right? You know, Zen mind, beginner's mind. That's what I have tattooed on my left ankle. just to remind me, you know. And so, but Patrick. I see Daijaku saying something similar, and about, she talks about, at least the way I read it, was you have to have a firm small self first. You have to trust in your small self before you can say, okay, let me open this part of me to the bigger self, to things that may threaten the self, because you have to, you know, trust. So.
Yes, Ken.
Was it what? You never trusted it.
Yeah, I never, you know, but I feel like I had to have the aspiration of a bigger self in order to find my small self, to get acquainted with a small self. Because a small self for me was always complicated. So I feel like I had to kind of have an aspiration for a bigger self that eventually led me back to a little bit home.
What did you aspire from the big self?
Well, I mean, a feeling of peace, not necessarily a blissful peace, but just like a calm mind, with some awareness, with some, you know, clear-mindedness. So those are the kind of things that I, you know, that kind of like, through practice, I kind of aspired towards those ideas, and I started to feel some of the groundedness, so I began to trust more and more in the practice, and the practice, you know, that this experience leads you to there, and a little bit, and you get closer and closer, and I feel like I would be lied to, so to speak. So there's been this, you know, trust relationship, but it had to be outside of myself. It couldn't start with me in the small self. I mean, there's a point of having to learn to accept yourself because that's who you are. Mm-hmm. But my goals or my ideas of myself are really short-sighted at that time. Wants and needs, you know, life and empty. So I need to get outside of myself in order to find myself. Yeah.
Some of the words you were using were the ones that came up in here too as you were describing that. For me, maybe mine's just the opposite, because I didn't come running to this place, but I did come here because the small self was challenged for me. There's something, I referred just briefly when I spoke before, but there was something that was threatening the small self. And I wanted to find out whether there was, you know, a bigger self out there I could start trusting in. So, but Stan, yeah.
I've been practicing for quite a while, and what is really working on now, and what I've noticed it kind of in the background all my life is the partially the name that Norman gave me, Ninji Kokoro, patient teacher, because I'm impatient.
Mm-hmm.
One gulp, that's really. And when I do get into that stage where I'm getting patient and then mad that things are not going exactly the way I want them, when I want them, I'm beginning to see that more and more and really be able to step back and say,
So well,
the 25 years of coming, it's still coming. It was that long ago that we did a rotation. But really, it's and partially it's also being retired and maybe less pressures, but we're still in the substitute teaching just about every day. So we're very active, but it's still a wonderful feeling to be able to do that backward step and not get caught up.
So I would ask to turn us into the trust perspective again. Whenever you say you're impatient and you step back, we always, whenever something is sort of challenging us or something we don't like, we step back to something we trust, I would think. So what do you step back to? What goes back to saying, I can now trust in doing this, so my impatience will sort of go back?
Sit here or at home or wherever, just being, having had the years of practice, that is a real grounding gut knowledge of what open, empty space is like. And then bringing that to that moment where I get, oh, this is the way it's supposed to be, it's like, oh yeah. And just being able to relax into that, oh yeah.
I just had this thought that, you know, there's this cliche of preaching to the choir, but if we're all practicing here, we all have trust in the practice, right? You know, and so I'm like, okay, yeah, there's the choir, you know, practicing. So, so Edie, yes. I'm sorry, you have to speak up for me. My age is affecting my ears. I can hear you now. You got your Verizon there, right? Okay.
I just wanted to add to what Ken and Patrick had said, because I think that many years ago, before I started practicing, to me, I felt like I was always trying to trust somebody or trust a particular situation. Or always, even now, you know, oftentimes trying to know enough about the situation to have predictive power of the situation. And as I continue to practice, I think that the best way is describing a feeling of open-heartedness, that it feels physically just warm in my heart, and that I can always drop there. And that when the situation doesn't hold my expectations, there is that place where everything seems to be held. And I think that that's probably the way that I relate to what other people are saying, a sense of that belonging to a greater field of awareness. It's more of a technical awareness, perhaps, but that connectedness. Seems fundamental. But devotion is so much an anchor.
Trusting is a very vulnerable position to give trust or to put your faith in something. And usually it's not something, I think it's people frequently, you know. Probably a fine example is, I think when people get married or go into a long-term relationship, there's great open-heartedness there, right, initially. And sometimes that part of that goes away. So, but yeah, it's, trust is, so. Richard.
Maybe this is a little devil's advocate.
I like that.
I kind of have a sense that trust might is a dangerous word in a way. I say that because the real issue is that you fully become complete and trustable. And the issue really isn't so much whether you trust somebody else, because you never, that's something you don't control. You know, but if, and it's really rewording what was just said. You know, if I've come to have a, and very often I don't, so I don't think I'm trustable. You know, I don't trust my opinions, my expectations, my assumptions. They're always wrong. You know, that, you know, but, yeah, if I come to a situation open-hearted, very hard and rare and difficult, and I don't know if I ever do, but if I could and if I did, I would be trusting then, probably almost everything, you know, but coming from a self-completeness, you know, and not expecting or knowing what will come from the other. Almost no matter who they are. I mean, I could say, yeah, you know, based on who that the Dalai Lama is and, you know, my teacher. But finishing the thought, I don't know if there's much value in putting trust in the other as much as developing yourself and completing yourself as a loving and forgiving and unjudging human being.
You know, what I'm hearing is, in a sense, is that it's playing with words a bit, but trusting and being fully engaged, trusting and being open-hearted, that's where your trust is. You fall back, or you believe in that.
That's it.
You know, and so it's trust is, you know,
yeah,
where do you put your...
Do you trust other people or other things that are based on, you know, I mean, they're fallible.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need to. If you're solid... You're trustable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But things happen.
Yeah.
Different way of looking at it.
Yeah.
Or maybe not.
Yeah. So let me read the four questions again to see anybody else. Oh, Edie, yes, I'm sorry. I actually volunteered you and then we got away and you reminded me to come back. Thank you.
So I am trusting a different kind of knowing. It's not because somebody said something, therefore I know it, but coming from a different place of knowing, there's a trust there. It's like I can't quantify it, but I know there's a knowing there. And then the other kind of trust is staying open and trusting when I don't know. So trusting, coming from that place of knowing that doesn't have anything to do with anybody in particular or situation, and then trusting not knowing.
Yeah. We hear that in our practice. I hope the audio is picking up your comments. Sometimes they get a little muffled. We're capturing that. So, anyone else? Yes.
So, when we've been talking about trusting the small self, the word that comes up a little bit is confidence.
What was that? Confidence?
Confidence.
Confidence.
And, I've noticed recently when I think about what is it that I want, nowadays what's coming up is confidence. And first of all, it's confidence that I'm doing the right thing. And then that kind of moves into confidence that I can not have expectations and just let things unfold.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, Joyce.
My trust is being tested. I think, as I sit here and think, what is my trust? Why is it seemingly getting bounced around. And I think it's the external political situation. I don't know how to trust. So I retreat back to my basic sense of value system and where how I'm grounded and hope, maybe hope, that everything will be all right.
Mm-hmm.
In the external landscape up there.
I'm biting my lip on saying something that's because I don't want to say the T word, which isn't trust. Okay. So. So.
Trust.
I sort of turned the tables, didn't I, a little bit, asking you the questions instead of usually you get to ask the Dharma guest, but you can certainly ask me some questions. Richard, you had your gosh.
As it bounced around here, what sticks in my mind, there's the trust in not knowing, you know, that in the dark or over the cliff or we're born, we're gonna die, but we still trust.
Mm-hmm.
Without knowing, we'll press on. You know, that's kind of almost the whole big decision in life. You know, is will I say yes or no? And with not knowing. No, not knowing.
I guess that's why we show up on the cushion as frequently as we do, not knowing what's going to arise in that 40 minutes that we're here. So any questions? Yes. I don't know your name.
Elise.
Hi.
How do you go about learning to trust other people? I've always been self-reliable. I don't put my trust in anybody.
How do you go about trusting other people? You have to be open to maybe getting hurt sometimes. And what you see in that person, this is me. You trust somebody, and they don't meet your expectations. Sometimes, you know, that's what I would see. Is we all get hurt, but it's worth going back a second time and trust again. You know, open, being open-hearted, being engaged. Some of these words again are just, that would be my thought on that, Stan.
Could you give Elise a story of you doing that?
Of being hurt,
and then
coming back. Yes. That's a good question. You know, I've tried for many years not to get hurt. You know, my whole life is like, you know, no ups and downs, just sort of keep it along. So, you know, but you're right. You know, when have I? You know, been hurt. You know, I know when I hurt somebody else that I'm still living with. When have I been hurt? I'm sure I have, but I probably bury those. Well, this experience that I told you about, where someone said she didn't trust me anymore, that hurt. That really hurt, and I believed I was in the right. Nothing ever came of the failure of the mistake I made, but I was hurt by that because I really believe in trust and faith, and that I think that's what, you know, that did hurt me. And I'm sure other things did too, but I probably try to bury them. But you know, we're all going to get hurt. You know, it's just that's it. So yes, Shin Yi.
That's an interesting question, and I can pull some of the things like what Ken was saying with practice. Self-awareness practice, there's a centering of I can bear trusting that I can bear what comes.
Mm-hmm.
And also by letting go of expectations, which someone was talking about, like my preconceived notion, like maybe you hurt me I think you hurt me because I had some idea about who you were. I didn't really see you. So when you behaved as yourself, I was upset because I had a different picture of you. You know, so one way I learned to trust, because one of my issues was disappointment, you know, being disappointed. And I had to work for a long time with, how come I'm always getting disappointed with other people? And in one part, it was because of my projections onto other people of who I thought they were or who I wanted them to be, rather than seeing who they are. So by having that really long, I mean, it took me a long, long time of carrying this question of, for me, why am I always getting disappointed? Why am I always getting hurt? You know, because I'm the common denominator. So that by carrying that question and with practice, over time, this trust that you're speaking of, and really there's more here, a sense of that in the core, that I'm able to walk a little bit easier, you know. And I think that you can be open, right? You're talking about just having this open-heartedness in that trust that people are essentially good and mean well, you know. But it doesn't mean their behavior is always acceptable, you know.
I was just thinking, being married for 40-some years, there are a lot of small hurts going on, you know. I'm sure at times my wife is not meant to hurt me, but I felt hurt, and vice versa. There's that trust in, well, maybe she wasn't trying to hurt me. You know, sometimes what we say and what someone's heard is something else. But yes, Kokio.
I also think about this, you know, trusting other people is hard, and you were talking about the small self, the limited self we think we are, and the big self, or like our true nature. Mm-hmm. And the more I open to my big true nature, the more I can, I trust that in everyone else. So if I'm caught in the small self version of someone else, that's almost like never that trustworthy, really. Mm-hmm. But if I can remember, kind of see underneath, and it's not something you can see someone's true nature, but you know that they're actually this amazing Buddha, actually. To be able to then trust that in people, which is not easy, but that seems like what's truly trustworthy in everyone, even though it's maybe very covered and confused by the small self.
Yeah. Any other comments? Patrick said I should be looking at wrapping up soon. But I do want to read a poem. It may have nothing to do with trust, and may have something to do with trust, but I think most of us have heard of Jane Hirschfield. I guess one of my most favorite poem of hers is from a book called After. It's called, It Was Like This, You Were Happy. It was like this, you were happy, then you were sad, then happy again, then not. It went on, you were innocent or you were guilty, actions were taken or not. At times you spoke, at other times you were silent. Mostly it seems you were silent. What could you say? Now it is almost over. Like a lover, your life bends down and kisses your life. It does this not in forgiveness between you. There is nothing to forgive. But with the simple nod of a baker at the moment he sees the bread is finished with transformation. Eating too is a thing now only for others. It doesn't matter what they will make of you or your days. They will be wrong. They will miss the wrong woman, miss the wrong man. All the stories they tell will be tales of their own invention. Your story was this, You were happy, then you were sad, you slept, you awakened. Sometimes you ate roasted chestnuts, sometimes persimmons. Thank you. These are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I